The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear we're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. Your host, John Stadtmiller, with you on this Tuesday, 19 March 2019. Yesterday, I had a caller call in from California. And he wants to pick fly stuff out of my sugar bowl about the issue of money. Why do we call it money? It's not money. Well, I was thinking about that in the last day, and I thought, you know, we are always trying to correct those that are incorrect with proper terminology. How many times have you heard me say, I'm tired of hearing myself say it, but this is a republic, not a democracy. Now, evidently, the people that know the difference are not talking to those that don't, because we keep hearing it. And how I know that is that you contact a talk show host, media, mainstream media, and they don't like to appear to be stupid to their audience. Although they themselves might be lacking fact and ignorant themselves, or maybe they're just playing an agenda game, sometimes you don't know. But I know this for sure, that talk show hosts don't like to look stupid in front of their listeners. And that's not what I'm talking about, the call from California. And I'm not saying that it was making me look stupid. That's not the point. The point is that we start building our sandcastles in the sky, and we've got everything manicured in the way we want it. You know what? That's not going to do anything. We got to get our hands and our fingers deep into the good earth here and rip these suckers out by the roots. Those, of course, who I'm speaking about are the globalists, the New World Orderites, the money masters. Give them a name. They're synonymous. They're one and the same. And they want total control. They've already got the power. Now they're seeking the control. That's why you're seeing politically what's happening in this country, happening in this country right now. And, you know, Richardson, his deal, he got into this word thing, and, well, words are not being used the way they're properly, and, yeah. Well, what else, if you're talking to Joe Blow from Kokomo, you know, what term do you want me to use for the substitute word for money? Bling? Cash? Well, you know, this is what they know it as. I know it's phony. You know it's phony. It's nothing but a system of, it's just a system of debt and credit. That's all that it is. And it amazes me. There is so much that can be accomplished. And I know it's like herding cats. You know, we could wipe this democracy thing off of their lips in 24 to 48 hours if everybody just got centered and said, you know what? We're going to start checking these people. You know, we're tired of them lying, but misrepresenting and calling our country something that it's not. Well, in their what they're creating in their world, that's their democracy. As long as you can hoodwink, pull the wool over, any form of subterfuge or lie, that's what we're going to do. That's what we do, because we're good at it. But sometimes you can do an instant check, drop a word, it's like a little mini nuke going off. All of a sudden, oh gosh. Would I like to see that happen? You're damn right I'd like to see it happen. And more often. So it was kind of, it kind of irritated me in a way that, you know, somebody wants to groom me because they don't think I'm yet perfect enough. And why do you keep doing that? You people, why do you keep doing that? Okay, what do you want to call it? In our own circles, let's get our own little code words and, you know, we'll understand it. But nobody outside will. And every once in a while, these broadcasts, these conversations are shared. And people went, whoa, I didn't know that. Who the heck are these people? Who is that guy? What's he talking about? You know, it's one of the conditions of the human species. Inquiring minds just want to know. Well, I saw something the other day. And this is the Europa series, The Last Battle. And Ken O'Keefe kicks this thing off. And what's he talking about? It's what I've been talking about for a quarter of a century. You know, I see people come by. Some recently arrived, some been around for a while. Me, I've got mold growing on the north side of the tree. Or is that lichens? I never could figure it out. And I've been pounding this for 25 years plus. It didn't take me too long to look at the game board and figure out what the game is all about and who was in charge of it. You know, you heard cute little sayings like, oh, follow the money. Yeah, yeah. Well, this is the tool that they have used to subvert, buy out, crush, any number of adjectives I could throw in here. And that is the one thing. That is the Achilles heel to the globalist. The very thing that they created. And, you know, geez, well, they're greedy. Don't they want to keep this thing going? You got to understand the way this game works. And if you don't, well, then you're going to be asking questions from now until eternity. Here's Ken O'Keefe. And he says it spot on.
If there was one physical subject, one material subject that we should focus on, in my opinion, it is very clear that the head of the snake is the financial system. The whole point of finance is to indebt, otherwise to enslave. What is a mortgage? I mean, what does that stand for? It's a death grip. So when you get a mortgage, you have a death grip held over you because you are in debt. You don't even own the house. The bank owns the house that loans you the money to buy the house, unless you're fortunate enough to have all the money to buy it outright. And even then, you can be taxed by the government, and if you fail to keep up with those taxes, the government can then take it from you. The whole system is based on a financial fraud, which effectively takes the power that we have, and it gives it to a tiny group of individuals who are running the world through the control of finance. With the infinite supply of money that we have allowed them to take, they have literally an infinite supply of money, and with that money, and from their psychopathic point of view, they have bought everything and everyone who can be bought. So those of us who cannot be bought, because we operate on a level that goes way beyond the material, we are not rewarded for such behavior, we are punished for such behavior. And the most slovenly, disgustingly criminal, pedophilia, corrupt moral individuals, those are the ones that are rewarded in this system, which is upside down. We reward the pedophiles, we reward the corrupt, we reward the liars, we reward the people with no morals at all.
At all. Mike, I'm going to send this over to you. Post this up on our website. We're going to put the entire Europa, The Last Battle, the series. You can get it through republicbroadcasting.org. One-stop shop. It's got all 10 of the episodes, so you won't have to hop, skip, and jump around. And this is on Brighteon, by the way. So you don't have to worry about, oh, gosh, I got to watch this quick before YouTube pulls it down. You know, people finally are getting the idea that the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world with Facebook and YouTube and all of this, you know, just because it's the most popular, it's also the most controlling. You know, I know people that used to line up for their favorite restaurant. Well, of course, it was everybody else's favorite restaurant. And you would literally spend more time standing in line than you would dining. And I would think about this, and I would think, is it that important? What is this, a status symbol? You're a gold star of a day that you stand there and punish yourself just to sit down and eat a meal? Is the meal really that good? Or is the place down the street, hey, it's not bad. No waiting. I think I'll go eat there. Or, God forbid, pick something up at the grocery store, open up a cookbook, and cook something yourself at home. My goodness. In this day and age, Betty Crocker? Who is that? Joan Vion. I am really sorry to see this woman leave the face of the planet. I really am. She was such a dedicated, hardworking, no nonsense, had a sense of humor, didn't show it that often. But she was a hard driving woman. She stayed on point and she never gave up. And, well, she finally gave up because cancer killed her. But just watching her, and I can remember having face-to-face conversations with her. I miss the woman. I really do. Well, I'm going to intersperse today's program with some of these clips because they are good. You know, I mean, I especially find it fascinating to be listening to words coming from the other side of the grave, if you will, from people that have already passed. You know, supposedly, who was it? Mike Ponce de Leon was looking for the fountain of youth. Well, this is the fountain of immortality. It's called video. Here's Joan Vion, and she's talking about, and this series was done shortly after the 2008 financial crisis. But she has a lot of information. There was a lot of things done. I was always asking the question, okay, what's Plan B for the bankers? Well, you're going to learn a little bit more about Plan B for the bankers and their goals and their aims. Folks, this is just starting to get going. Now they're pulling out all the stops. Now they're going for broke. The only thing we have to do is maintain what we've got, stay vigilant, push back on them. Eventually, they will be defeated, but it's not going to be easy. I'm not going to sit here and blue sky you. We've had enough of the blue sky and stuff shoved in our face for most of our lives. I remember the line out of the movie, cheer up, things can't get any worse. Well, sure enough, I cheered up. What happened? Things got worse. Well, if you know the game, you know the eventualities of the game. And is it the end of the world as we know it, the end of life? No. It's a construct of what men have created. And other men caught on to their game. When central banks rule the world, folks.
Hi, my name is Joan Vion. I'm the executive director of the Women's International Media Group in Maryland. I'd like to thank you all for coming. This evening, we're going to be discussing the continuing changes that are occurring in America to our country, to the structural system of government, and to the debt that you and I as taxpayers will be responsible for. America, as we know it, is in the process of changing. The role of Congress and the position of Congress is changing. The amount of debt that we as Americans owe through the Federal Reserve and the Treasury system is increasing. The elimination of the final barriers separating all the countries of the world from world government is at the heart of the credit crises. It is one thing to read history. It is another thing to live history and to respond to change. I trust that this video and the information will provide you with the understanding necessary for you to make provision before the subsequent changes to these changes occur. So with that, please join me as we take a look at when central banks rule the world. I didn't expect to have a set of three videos to overlie and to interconnect, but that's exactly what has happened. In May, before anybody ever knew what was going to happen in September and October, I filmed the video, 21st Century Feudalism, in which I looked at the powers and the players who control world government. Then, with regard to the credit crises, in September and October, I filmed the 2008 credit crises, looking to understand what was happening. We are in the middle of major change. It's called creative destruction. We all know banks are in crises. At the heart of banks being in crises is a document authored by Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson called the Department of the Treasury Blueprint for a Modernized Financial Regulatory System. Let's take a look at the 2007 to 2009 credit crises. First of all, it is historic. It goes back to 1929. It is a conduit worldwide to where banks will rule, central banks. It is structural, changing the world of nation states to a system in which we are all interconnected. And finally, there's structural change, changing the Constitution and the mandated balance of power that we have known as a country since our forefathers set in place the balance of government. So, when central banks rule the world, from Bretton Woods 1 to Bretton Woods 2, many think the world is ruled through governments. However, it is central banks and the power behind them that rule the world. The global credit crisis is how the remaining wealth and power will be transferred. Many think the world is ruled through governments. Central banks, which are private corporations, began lending to governments in the 1600s. The tearing down of the barriers between countries started in 1944 with the first Bretton Woods meeting. 65 years later, one barrier stands between the countries and an opportunity for the central banks and international bankers to seize control of the world's assets. Actually, we are now talking national regulatory barriers being torn down. And in fact, it is so important that the national regulatory barriers be torn down that a Rothschild, Sir Evelyn de Rothschild, was on TV in February to talk about the fact that national barriers had to be torn down, that he said each country must face up not to just regulation, but teaching banksters and investment people that they have to work within prescribed limits. We can't do what we have done in the last 10 years. We must have regulation. Now, in order to understand how important this was, the Rothschilds as a family are very secretive. You basically don't see them on TV. You basically don't hear about anything with regard to them, their business dealings or anything that they're involved in. And so for Sir Evelyn de Rothschild to go on CNBC like he's just a normal person, which, if you understand the history of the Rothschilds, which is part of my video, 21st Century Feudalism, you will know that this was very unique that he was even on TV. At the time when President Obama was coming in, we have Paul Volcker, who was named as one of his White House observers. And Obama came in with the same mantra as we saw from Bush, urging a global financial overhaul. Paul Volcker basically said part of his role is to help mastermind, and that is a great term, what could become the biggest overhaul of the U.S. financial system in decades. And let me say, not only the biggest overhaul of the U.S. financial system, but the biggest overhaul of the structure of the American government in our history. There have been many books that have been written. This one I happen to have in my library called Rethinking Bank Regulation. Look at that, Till Angels Govern. I don't think I agree with that, but the truth of the matter is the present situation that is occurring right now really goes back a very long time. This is not a plan that's only 5 years old or 10 years old. This is a very long overdue plan. Does it go back to the beginning of the central banks in 1600? Well, that's a matter of discussion. I don't think we can know that. But the truth of the matter is we are at a culmination point in history in which it goes back several hundred years. Many think the world is ruled by governments. The Federal Reserve lends newly printed money to the commercial banking system of the United States. Thus, the balances on all bank loans, mortgages, and credit cards are ultimately owed to the Federal Reserve. Think about that. Many think the world is ruled by governments. Central banks, which collectively control money worldwide, are using chaos, credit, and debt to finalize their conquest. If and when our government and other governments no longer govern their banking systems, then the central banks will have total control and rule the world. How did we get to a place where governments no longer rule and the people no longer have representative government? Follow me. First, complexity. The credit crises we face in the financial markets has many novel effects, largely arising from the complexity and sophistication of today's financial institutions and instruments and the remarkable degree of global financial integration that allows financial shocks to be transmitted around the world at the speed of light. That was Ben Bernanke, October 15, 2008. Banks are interwoven. The unfolding of the crises has shown how completely banks were interwoven with all elements of the system, the financial system, worldwide. Banks were the main transmission mechanism that spread the credit crises across borders. Well, I would like to explain to Mr. Davies that I'm not that stupid to think that not only was there a transmission mechanism, but that there was a planned agenda to accomplish the fact that if you take the top largest banks in the world and they stop buying paper, bonds, different forms of paper that they sell and offer between one another and in the market, that if they stop buying each other's paper, they could create a credit crisis. Mr. Davies went on to say, banks are at the center of everything that has gone wrong over the past 18 months, and that needs to be fixed. Well, that leads us to the fact that there is like a web of banks that already are in control of the world. And he goes on, therefore, banks could have caused the main problem in the first
place. What's up, guys? Rocco.
That was my fault. I I screwed a pooch there, as they say. Sorry about that. Let me see if I can get back to where we were at here. This is an approximation, but I think we're pretty close.
System in decades. And let me say, not only the biggest overhaul of the U.S. financial system, but the biggest overhaul of the structure of the American government in our history. There have been many books that have been written. This one I happen to have in my library called Rethinking Bank Regulation. Look at that, Till Angels Govern. I don't think I agree with that, but the truth of the matter is the present situation that is occurring right now really goes back a very long time. This is not a plan that's only 5 years old or 10 years old. This is a very long overdue plan. Does it go back to the beginning of the central banks in 1600? Well, that's a matter of discussion. I don't think we can know that. But the truth of the matter is we are at a culmination point in history in which it goes back several hundred years. Many think the world is ruled by governments. The Federal Reserve lends newly printed money to the commercial banking system of the United States. Thus, the balances on all bank loans, mortgages, and credit cards are ultimately owed to the Federal Reserve. Think about that. Many think the world is ruled by governments. Central banks, which collectively control money worldwide, are using chaos, credit, and debt to finalize their conquest. If and when our government and other governments no longer govern their banking systems, then the central banks will have total control and rule the world. How did we get to a place where governments no longer rule? And the people no longer have representative government? Follow me. First, complexity. The credit crises we face in the financial markets has many novel effects, largely arising from the complexity and sophistication of today's financial institutions and instruments and the remarkable degree of global financial integration that allows financial shocks to be transmitted around the world at the speed of light. That was Ben Bernanke, October 15th, 2008.
Whoops.
Banks are interwoven. The unfolding of the crises has shown how completely banks were interwoven with all elements of the system, the financial system worldwide. Banks were the main transmission mechanism that spread the credit crises across borders. Well, I would like to explain to Mr. Davies that I'm not that stupid to think that not only was there a transmission mechanism, but that there was a planned agenda to accomplish the fact that if you take the top largest banks in the world and they stop buying paper, bonds, different forms of paper that they sell and offer between one another and in the market, that if they stop buying each other's paper, they could create a credit crisis. And Mr. Davies went on to say, banks are at the center of everything that has gone wrong over the past 18 months, and that needs to be fixed. Well, that leads us to the fact that there is like a web of banks that already are in control of the world. And he goes on, therefore, banks could have caused the main problem in the first
and this transhumanist agenda, ain't it cool, man? It's being pushed by the mainstream media over the world as a good thing. This is the process that they pulled people in on.
Shut up, David. That's David Icke. Okay, let's get back to this. Let's take the commercial here. I'll get this worked out. You ever have one of those days? I found out today some animal dug up my 3-week-old dead cat from my backyard. Nothing left but little patches of fur. Poor thing, can't even rest in peace. At any rate, we'll be right back. I'll get this straightened around.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. September 2018. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I've been using Extendivite for many years now. May 2018. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. March 2018. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. February 2018. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Big John. Every morning at the mine, you can
all
see
right, continuing this series with Joan Vion on the money masters and how they're manipulating. And these are the people, you want to be free people, you want to be not a slave anymore on the plantation, these are the characters that have to go. And as you hear this, you'll understand. Because it's not just about the banking, and it's just not about the money. It's not about the greed. It's about the control and flipping the respective world governments to mold it into a, well, among their circles, a fashionable new world order.
That's the main problem in the first place, and the need for global regulations. When we start taking a look at the Group of Ten Global Banking Network, there are 33,101 banks in the Group of Ten countries. That would be the United States, Canada, Germany, Japan, Italy, France, Great Britain, Luxembourg, and the Benelux countries. And so that's where you get the G10. There are 337,406 branches. So therefore, we have a pretty large system that rules the world in and of itself through the banking system. The world's largest banks, UBS in Switzerland, Barclays in London, BNP Paribas in Paris, Citigroup in New York, Hong Kong Shanghai Banking Company in London, the Royal Bank of Scotland in Scotland, Credit Arcole in Paris, the Mitsubishi Bank in Tokyo, the Deutsche Bank in Frankfurt, and Bank of America. When we start taking a look at here in the United States, the number of banks that we have 1,585 national banks, We have 874 state banks. And then we have something called non-member banks, 4,744. And then we have savings banks, 1,227, for a total of almost 8,500 banks. Non-member banks include banks like Merrill Lynch Bank, you know, that's for their credit card, GMAC, GMAC Automotive Bank, Nordstrom's, GE, GM, Target, Sallie Mae. These are all what they call non-member banks. What this really means is they are not under the auspices or the control of the Federal Reserve. So what is the goal here? To bring all banks, all types of banks, under the control of the Federal Reserve. So the non-member banks, 4,744, they want to move them under the control of the Federal Reserve, along with state banks, state chartered banks. So where are we now, and how did we get there? Let's do an overview. The world before Bretton Woods won, what happened at Bretton Woods won, the world since Bretton Woods won, the current environment, the credit crises, the Treasury blueprint, and Bretton Woods II, a global financial regulatory system. So the world before Bretton Woods won, real simply, every country was its own. They had barriers between the countries. They were national. And they didn't have, if you will, free trade. And free trade is a misnomer. I could spend a long time talking about free trade. It is not free. It has nothing to do really with trade. It has to do with control. So when we start taking a look at where the countries were, they had, they were called individual nation states, and they had barriers that separated them from all the other countries of the world. We're going to take a look at timeline of events. When we take a look at 1609 to 1913, we have the creation of a central bank system worldwide. Long before the barriers fell, powerful and greedy men were planning to control the monetary system of the world. They formed a private corporation known as a central bank that would lend money to the government. The loan would have no fixed period for repayment, allowing the interest to accrue without ever ending. So they were creating a bank for perpetual interest, usury debt-based lending. They who control the central banks of the world control the world, its governments, and its people. Here we have Prince Edward, otherwise known as Edward Wessex. And I'm very grateful to him as a one-time movie producer. He produced a series called Crown and Country about all his ancestors. And I had always suspected that the British royal family were one of the major stockholders in the Bank of England and maybe even the Federal Reserve Bank, as well as all other central banks that came maybe after the Bank of England, and he verified it. He talked about his forefather, King William II, who was the largest investor in the Bank of England with £10,000 investment of the £1.2 million raised. Here's an actual document. So thank you, Prince Edward. So we have a number of central banks in the world that have been around for a while. The first central bank began in Holland. Then the second one was in Sweden in 1688, the Bank of England, and then a number of other banks that brought us up to 1882. However, in December 24th, 1913, the Federal Reserve Bank here in the United States was formed. Now, I think it's very important that we take a look at the organizational chart of the United States from 1776 until December 23rd, 1913. We had the Constitution, we had the legislative branch, the executive branch, the judicial branch, and part of the executive branch was the Treasury. When the Federal Reserve Act was passed, there was this other entity that started to have control over our government. passed on December 24, 1913 at 11:45 p.m. by a small group of greedy senators after their opposing colleagues went home and recessed for the Christmas holidays. The Federal Reserve Act shifted responsibility for America's finances from Congress to a private corporation. The U.S. government and its taxpayers are in debt to this private corporation. This private corporation prints money on demand to lend to the U.S. government in the form of treasury bills, notes, and bonds. Because it prints money on demand rather than having it in their vaults, this is, again, debt, usury. And it is their basis for lending, and the American government has been pretty stupid to agree to paying interest on money that the central bank never, ever had to begin with. So what is the result of debt-based lending? The taxpayer is paying interest on money that the banks never had, and they printed it. That's a pretty good scheme. All of us would like to do that with our home finances. Every central bank issues their own currency, and if you take any amount of money out of your wallet, it'll say Federal Reserve note. The Federal Reserve in Washington, D.C. does not pay taxes, and it does not issue annual reports. No one knows who the private shareholders are. There is no public record. The empowerment of the Federal Reserve, the Federal Reserve Act has been amended over 195 times. In the last couple years, in 1999, it broadened the range of discount loans and types of collateral it would take. And then in March of 2008, isn't this interesting? They agreed to take mortgages as collateral. Very important for what we saw with Fannie and Freddie. The Federal Reserve and the Treasury created a $30 billion line of credit for J.P. Morgan to buy Bear Stearns. It was the first time since the Depression that something like that happened. It has worked with central banks on coordinated rate cuts. It has extended liquidity to other central banks. That's so that they will have enough dollars. In September 8th of 2008, the Federal Reserve took control of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, $5.4 trillion. With the credit crisis, the Federal Reserve powers are being greatly expanded. The Federal Reserve will be greatly enhanced by the transfer of wealth in the Treasury blueprint. So here we have 1913. So what happens now? Everything is starting to get hazy as we have continued to increase the power of the Federal Reserve. We then have, in 1930, an organization was set up called the Bank for International Settlements. Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor at Georgetown University, wrote in his book, Tragedy and Hope, "The powers of financial capitalism had another far-ranging aim, nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands able to dominate the political system of each country and economy of the world as a whole." This system was to be controlled in a feudalistic fashion by the central banks of the world, acting in concert by secret agreement, arrived at infrequent private meetings and conferences. And I say to you, what is the number one evil in the world? It goes back to the Garden of Eden. It wasn't when Eve ate the apple. Very simply, it's deceit, deception, and distortion. Carol Quigley goes on to say the apex of financial capitalism was to be the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, a private bank owned and controlled by the world's central banks, which they themselves were private corporations. So when we start taking a look at the world, we see a situation whereby all the central banks of the world look up to and are members of the Bank for International Settlements. Let me just say, as a freelance reporter, I've had the opportunity to cover, I don't know, 6 or 8 annual meetings at the Bank for International Settlements. The only way that you can go to the Bank for International Settlements is if they invite you. and they only have one time in which reporters can go to the bank, and that is at their annual meeting in June. 1933, Keynesian economics. So what happened at Bretton Woods? Bretton Woods really covers a time from 1944 to 2009. So what happened at Bretton Woods 1? First of all, it was the culmination in 2.5 years of planning for post-war reconstruction. And I point out that it was the U.S. and the U.K. treasuries that were in charge of it. The architects were from the U.S., Harry Dexter White, and from the U.K., John Maynard Keynes, the father of Keynesian economics. Here is a picture of these two architects. Now, what did they want? They wanted exchange rate stability. That's what they basically said. Interesting, we've never had it, have we? And they wanted the dollar to become the strongest currency in the world. It also created two international organizations called the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. John Maynard Keynes had suggested that there be a global currency called Bancor. That did not fly. The dollar as world reserve currency did. So, what does that mean with the dollar being the world reserve currency? And we are on the precipice of that being changed. It really means that a large amount of U.S. dollars were held by many governments and institutions as part of their foreign exchange reserves. It was the international pricing currency for products such as the trading of oil and gold, all priced in dollars. And that is in the process of being challenged as we speak. The World Bank and the World Bank Group, what did they do? Well, they set out originally for reconstruction to rebuild war-torn Europe, and then for development of various countries. Robert McNamara, who was our Secretary of Defense during the Vietnam War, ended up becoming the president of the World Bank in the mid-1970s. Yeah, that was really bad. He did a lot of evil things, and that's why his middle name is S for Strange. And one of the things that he did under his tenure was he forced third world countries into a financial plan in which they had to build projects that the World Bank said they needed to build, end of story. And of course, they had the financing available for these third world countries. The sad thing is that 80% of these developmental loans ended up becoming white elephants, leaving many countries in a position which is now known as highly indebted poor countries. How's that? HIPC, H-I-P-C, highly indebted poor countries. Oh yes, the size of the bank doubled. What does the World Bank do today? It lends to countries. It promotes economic activity. It has its own Wall Street type of operations where they set up offerings of global bonds, and they have established stock exchanges in most of the third world countries. Oh, let me tell you about what they do. Whenever they set up a stock exchange in a third world country, you have to have some stock to put on the exchange, right? So they make the countries privatize their holdings. Many countries might have control of their own banking system or their telecommunications, their telephone system. And so what they do is they end up privatizing it, listing it on the new exchange. And guess what? You won't believe this. The World Bank, to help out, buys up to 25% of the newly issued stock. Isn't that great? And then, to help with the risk, they have MIGA, which provides insurance to foreign investors so they won't lose any money. Lastly, it is a major proponent of sustainable development. The International Monetary Fund, set up in 1947, was to be the keeper of the rules and the main instrument of public international management. We're not going to go into that one. We're just going to take it by word. It lent to countries in need. In 1969, the IMF created the special drawing right, which is a basket of currencies. Now, it was created in 1969. It was used by the IMF as a unit of account. The basket of currencies, every 5 years, they change the basket of currencies. 2 years ago, they changed it, and we now have the basket is comprised of 44% of the U.S. dollar, 34% of the euro, 11% of the yen, and 11% of the pound sterling. At one time, it did have the Swiss franc. It has been adopted by the Bank for International Settlements in 2003. I was at the BIS at that time, and I did an interview with one of their economists, and I said, what is the reasoning for you changing from the Swiss franc to the special drawing right? And if you want to believe what he said, he told me that it was really just an accounting measure, that's all it was. Well, I beg to differ with him. When the Bank for International Settlements, which is the central bank's bank of all the central banks in the world, adopts the special drawing right, I almost think that we're looking for a global currency called the special drawing right, in which maybe they might even, after the credit crises, add an element of gold to it. The IMF today works with the World Bank on a broad array of financial arrangements. It created the Monetary and Capital Markets Department in 2007. It created global surveillance. It also has country surveillance. Believe me, every country is constantly and continuously being examined by World Bank auditors. And it has a financial system stability assessment report. The United States is in the process of getting our financial system stability report from the World Bank. So stay tuned in your television. So where are we? Where's the world since Bretton Woods? Well, this is what the countries used to look like. They were independent. They had a number of barriers, whether it was economic or political or trade or legal or military or intelligence. They had a number of things that were done called the International Financial Architecture to change it between 1995 and 2008. And now we see that it is the regulatory barriers that have to be torn down. Every time they tore down a barrier, they established an international level above the countries of the world. In 1944, it was the IMF World Bank. In 1945, it was the United Nations. In 1994, it was the World Trade Organization. In 1998, it was the International Criminal Court. In 2001, it was the military and the intelligence that was torn down. So what do we have? When there are no barriers between the nation states, it basically allows for a powerful group of people to control the world from above. That's what we're talking. Who are they? They are the bankers, both central and international. So let's take a look at the final barrier. And it is this regulatory barrier here for all the regulatory barriers between the countries to go global. Now, in order for this to happen, you have to create a major problem. Now, I'll tell you very honestly that I wasn't aware of the fact up until 2008, that the regulatory barriers had to be torn down. And that is because I knew there were other entities that they had sent up in 1999 to start a global regulatory surveillance of the world. And so I had assumed that the regulatory barriers were down. But no, there was more to it. So you create a global credit crisis. Now, what will help any global credit crisis? In 1971, Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard. It was the death of the dollar, August 15th, 1971. Before that time, you couldn't really mess around with the value of currencies because they were supported and backed up by gold. So what happened when Nixon severed gold from being part of the dollar is that it allowed currencies to float against one another. In other words, it was possible to play with the currencies. For the first time in the history of the world's monetary system, it was not based on a tangible. No accountability with a floating system. Money can be printed and reprinted upon demand, thus expanding money endlessly. Since 1971, the dollar has dropped against the Deutsche Mark, which is no longer, it's now the euro and the yen, anywhere from 66% to 70%. So we're starting to see a number of things happen. The 1980s were very crucial with the savings and loan crises, a law passed by Carter called the Monetary Deregulation Act, and then the tax cuts of Reagan. So let's follow through as we start taking a look at the different things that happened during this time. First of all, the savings and loan crises. The total cost to the U.S. taxpayer was $124.6 billion. Now, at the time, we thought that was a lot of money. We're now looking at $11 trillion for the current crises. Hello? We had the savings, the Lincoln savings and loan crises with the Keating Five. Five senators received $300,000 in political money. Senator Glenn and McCain were rebuked, and three lost their seats. In 1989, they established the Resolution Trust Corporation to dispose of failed thrifts and their properties. Today, we call them toxic assets. There was no accountability to Congress, and today they're looking to set up public-private partnerships to do the same thing. The Resolution Trust Corporation closed 747 thrifts with a value of $394 billion. They pioneered something called equity partnerships or limited partnerships. We then had the Monetary Deregulation Act passed by Jimmy Carter. The Monetary Deregulation Act permitted banks and savings and loans to charge going interest rates according to what the market was bearing. So what it really did was it eliminated a law that said banks had to pay you a minimum of interest on your deposits. So that is why we have, since 1980, the ability for banks to charge 35% interest on credit cards, or up to 35% interest, and pay 0.25% or less on savings. You know, and they're talking about, how do you get people to save? Well, people didn't want to save in the bank. The bottom line is they didn't want to save in the bank because they would get a pittance. So many people took more risk and went into the stock market. The result? During Paul Volcker's tenure, the Fed was stripped of its ability to constrain debt expansion when it enacted the Monetary Deregulation Act of 1980. So in other words, the Fed started to change what they could do to rein in inflation. And this is from Secrets of the Temple from William Grider. He said, "The only restraining influence you have left," a senior Fed official complained, "is interest rates. Restraint which ultimately works by bankrupting the customer. It obviously hurts people more." Are you feeling the shift here? Because the shift gets harder and heavier with the Reagan tax cuts. Reagan passed seven major tax laws in 8 years. In 1981, he passed IRTA. It was the biggest tax cut and change in 35 years. In 1982, he passed TEFRA, which was the biggest tax increase. In 1986, he passed TEFRA, TRA, Tax Reform Act. What did the Tax Reform Act do? The top tax brackets were reduced. The lower tax brackets increased. You feel the pain yet? The capital gains taxed ordinary income.
All right, we'll pause it here. We've got to take the top of the hour break. This is Joan Vian, When Central Banks Rule the World, more information than I could possibly provide in 2 hours.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.